Hello, welcome to the Eating for Health podcast. I'm Dr. Harriet Holm, founder of Healthy Eating Doctor, registered nutritionist and doctor. I studied medicine at Cambridge University, worked in the NHS for over a decade, have a PhD in genetics, lecture on nutrition, and was commissioned to write a novel degree combining culinary skills, nutrition and health. I'm on a mission to break down nutrition myths and share science-backed nutrition to help empower you. I'll share some interviews, theories and practical tips focused around nutrition and health. Stay tuned to find out more. This week, I'm delighted to welcome two sisters, Claire and Nikki, a stylist and former criminal barrister who founded the award-winning clothing brand Tilby. The brand was conceived after Claire had her first baby and found a gap in the market for breastfeeding-friendly clothes that looked and felt great. We're going to talk firstly about their breastfeeding experiences, about the importance and benefits associated with breast milk, and then find out more about their brand. I'm also really excited to launch a giveaway to say thank you to the 10,000 people following me on Instagram, and Tilby have very kindly donated a stunning tracksuit. But if you aren't pregnant or breastfeeding, it's still worth entering as they have different options, including a regular fit too. For more information about breast milk and the infant microbiome, have a look at the health article section on my website, healthyeatingdoctor.com. So this episode is going to be slightly different to the others. And while I'm still going to focus on some nutrition and talk a lot about breastfeeding, which is obviously really important in women's health, I'm going to be talking with two sisters behind the clothing brand Tilby. And Tilby sells award-winning maternity and nursing clothes. And I thought it'd be really fascinating insight to talk about how fashion and nutrition have collided. So I'm delighted to welcome both Claire and Nikki Wasey, founders of Tilby. So if you could just introduce yourselves and introduce the brand Tilby, that would be great.
Hi, I'm Claire. I'm the younger sister. Like to get that in quickly.
Not even that.
Yeah, I'm Claire, and this is
I'm Nikki.
And yeah, we are the faces behind Tilby, and we've been going since 2018. So we actually have just had our third birthday, but didn't celebrate it because Nikki was on holiday and I didn't know how to do any of the functioning stuff on the website to make it a celebration. So we missed that, but we've been up and running for 3 years, and we've been mums for five.
Obviously, I have to think about how old they are.
Both, I've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old.
I've got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old,
and both of us breastfed.
So that's what we're going to start off talking about first. So I think it's quite amazing that the NHS report that the number of babies that are either totally or partially breastfed at 6 to 8 weeks is actually less than half. So while I'm not going to talk at all about judgment and why that is, I just wanted to sort of, I guess, share some personal experiences and then talk a bit about why breastfeeding and, you know, nutrition for babies is so important. So did you both breastfeed it? I sound like you did. And what were your breastfeeding experiences?
I found breastfeeding my first a lot easier, strangely, than I did with Josh. I mean, it's difficult to start with, full stop, but I had mastitis 3 or 4 times with him. And I don't know whether it's like he wasn't latching as well, but I actually enjoyed the experience of breastfeeding, despite the bouts of mastitis with both of them. For me, it was hard work to start with, but actually long term, it was so much easier personally, because I didn't have to think about sterilizing bottles, about getting up in the night or having stuff on hand. I mean, I can't even think what I need.
I was in hospital for quite a few days. I was in hospital just over a week with Matilda, who's my first, and before having her, I remember going to a baby show, and this is before Tilby kind of came into fruition, and buying a breastfeeding top, because there was no real particular reason in my head that I wanted to, but I'd been breastfed, and Ruth would be our kind of most close example of a friend who had breastfed her babes, and it just seemed so natural and so easy for her to be able to feed on, like, on demand and things like that, that I just really wanted to. And I remember buying a pump and this top, and then, like, suddenly, like, in hospital coming, like, having her, I was like, what happens if I can't? What happens if I, you know, can't do it and it doesn't work? And actually, it it didn't come like supernaturally, but being in hospital for that 7 days, there was a midwife who was a specialist, and she just kept coming and checking her latch. And by the time I left, I felt super, super confident. I mean, still that confidence when you're out and about, it took a while. Like, you know, that first time you feed outside of your own house is quite terrifying. But I think that it helped me have someone there giving me the advice, giving me the tips on like the latch and how her lips should look, how her body should be placed, and like just really having that time to dedicate it to going, well, do you know what? I have nothing else to do here other than change her nappy and cuddle. So I may as well just
keep persevering.
And how long did you both breastfeed for?
With B, 7 months. With Josh, 8 months, about the same.
So for Seb, he would probably still be feeding now.
But
he's 3, he's not. I mean, people do, but I think it was over a year. Yeah, it was over a year for sure. It was about a year and 4 months, something like that. And then with Matilda, it was less time. And funnily enough, it was my mum who was like, oh, you don't need to breastfeed anymore. You've done your job. And I was like, okay. And I was travelling a lot with work, so it kind of just gradually petered off. But in retrospect, I kind of then was like, when it had finished, I kind of mourned it a little bit. So with Seb, I just kept going until he didn't want it anymore, really.
Yeah, I think I breastfed both of mine. I think I was quite sad giving it up the second time, you know, knowing it was final and it was never going to happen. I took some photos and felt quite sad about it at the time, actually. And why, it's so interesting that I felt sort of a bit similar. Maybe I wish I'd breastfed the first a bit longer. So I did it for about 14 months, something, 12 months. And I was going back to work and my PhD and just didn't really think it was going to fit in. But I breastfed my second one for a bit longer. And I think maybe as well, I had there was more information about the sort of importance of the benefits, I think, of breast milk by then, maybe the how it really impacts the microbiota, so all of those gut bugs, and how it can, and how it's really helping establish that in a way that just, you know, formula can't, because it contains those natural bacteria and it contains some of the natural prebiotics that help feed those good bacteria. So did you, when you were both feeding, did you know anything about the sort of the science behind it at all?
Not really. I mean, I knew that breastfeeding babies was good, and that the milk is amazing. You can see, like, if you're not well or if the baby's not well, you know, that you can see the change in the colour of the milk and how it adapts depending on what your body's doing. So just naturally by looking at it, you can see that the body is doing something. It's generating all the things that either your baby needs, or giving it more of what you're deficient in. Or so I knew that side of it, but I didn't really know a lot about it. I just knew that people always said breast milk is best. And
I thought it was more, I mean, when I was doing it, I felt that it was more about immunity. And I didn't really connect the gut health thing, probably until I spoke to you. I didn't realise that it was so important for gut health. It was more for me, like, kind of giving that, like, inbuilt immunity that the breastfeeding can give. Like, so in the fact that it works out what baby needs and what you're deficient in, like Nikki said. And so it was more about the immunity side of it for me.
So yeah, absolutely. When you're sick and you're a mum and you've, say, got a cold, your body's first line of defences is to make antibodies, and that helps fight the virus or the bacteria. So if you've got a cold, your antibodies are produced in your own body, and you're quite good and quick at doing that as an adult. But babies are a bit slower, and they take a bit longer to do that. So if you're a mum and you get a cold, your antibodies to fight the virus will naturally be transferred in your breast milk to your baby. And that's why it confers that immunity. So it's providing your baby with the antibodies to fight the virus. And that's why it really does provide that natural benefit and help their immune system when they're still little and they're not quite up to speed at doing it themselves. So it's, you know, I don't think you can really replicate that. And it's so amazing that it's so adaptive, because obviously you could meet thousands of different viruses or bacteria, but obviously you need specific antibodies for each one, and it's very tailored, obviously, according to what your environmental experience is, and provide exactly the same for your baby. So it's quite an amazing thing the way it does that. And there is this two-way relationship between the baby's mouth and the breast as well. So they communicate in two ways, which I think is quite incredible. The saliva from the baby is communicating with the mother. And so you've got that sort of what's called a dyad. I think it's quite an incredible relationship, which then is really difficult for formula companies to come up with something that can replicate that. Yeah. And so that's why I think breast milk is so different, because it's got all these naturally occurring things in it that are tailored for your baby that just can't be produced. So if you've got the antibodies, you've got the bacteria, the prebiotics, which can to some degree be produced, but it's difficult to replicate those.
I think also for me as well, I remember being in hospital and the lady next to me was formula feeding, and her baby was having like difficulties with, and I remember hearing her and her partner discussing, well, let's try this formula instead, or this formula, and they were like switching back and forth because the baby, it was disagreeing with the baby, and I was like, God, that sounds like far too much
hard work.
Not to mention the added, like, it was definitely a little bit of lazy, but also if you can feed your baby like in a second, like literally it will take a moment to get your boob out, rather than have to go and sterilize, like you said, prepare a bottle, make sure the temperature's right, not really knowing like what amount,
how much they
need. And that's another thing that sometimes people don't like with breastfeeding though, is that they don't know how much their baby's having.
Yeah, the unknown side of it, you know, it can be difficult. But I think once you've got used to it and you know that your breasts are emptying and you can see your baby's pooing and gaining weight, then you know, it becomes more reassuring and is easier. But certainly in the early days when you've no idea and you're new to it, I think it's a lot harder. Yeah. But as you say, formula milks are so similar and yet so different. So they're all marketed differently, but actually I think they're all, you know, very similar nutrition wise, because anything that's found to be better for your baby would then be a legislative change so that everyone would be doing the same. Yeah. So you wouldn't want to, you know, babies to miss out just because they didn't have formula A when they should have been having formula B.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of, I see people that are sort of worried about which formula, and, you know, and I think it's quite understandable, you know, because there are so many different options.
Also, formula is so expensive.
Cost-wise, it's so much cheaper to give them your own boob.
Yeah.
It is.
It is. I mean, it's like...
zero cost.
Know, there's no cost to it. There's obviously the discomfort, the pain, if you're going through those difficult times with it. And it's like, it's one of those really annoying things that everyone always used to say to you, but you will... it's like, it's hard and it's painful, but you will get over that pain. And people, and I do know why people are like, it's really frustrating when you tell me, because I'm in a lot of pain now. I don't want to have to go through this pain. But it's true that you come out the other side of it, and actually it's so much easier. It's so much more
Whenever I see convenient. A mother breastfeeding a baby, I'm like, oh, I'd love to be breastfeeding my baby. But seriously, it makes me just think, oh. And it's not so much because I was like, I love breastfeeding or anything like that. I just felt like it was like a really precious
bond. Yeah.
It's a time. I'm sure you get that from bottle feeding as well, but having not bottle fed from birth, I don't know what the bond is. And I know people who've actually bottle fed their babies, but exclusively with breast milk.
Mm.
So, you know, there is the other side of it as well. Like if for example, a latch doesn't happen and you really want to breastfeed, there are ways that you can do that. Like there's a feeding system which also can emulate breastfeeding. Like you can pump the milk, put it in this thing, and then they have it through a tube, and there's so many different ways if you want to. But I think that quite often I think the low numbers is because maybe there isn't the support and there isn't the access to help. Like my sister-in-law, her little one was really struggling with their latch, was an issue. Obviously it was times of COVID as well, so that was an added issue. But with she ended up having tongue tie, but I think it took them 2 months to get to that diagnosis of tongue tie, and she persisted, but it was like she was having to go into a room because it was so difficult to feed. Baby was upset, she was upset. It was really traumatic, and I don't think there was the support for her.
To help people with that.
And I think people also, there's sort of some judgment as well. People think this is natural. I should just be able to naturally do it. But it's like any skill, you have to learn. And if you're not taught or there are any difficulties, it's no shame in getting some help. And I think that's key. If you are in pain or you're having any difficulties, get some help with a, you know, IBCLC to really to help you and to help your breastfeeding journey, get the support that you need. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting just to sort of talk about pumped milk. So they've looked at babies and found that their differences in their microbiota, so their gut bacteria, in those babies who were exclusively breastfed and then those that were formula fed. So that we know for sure, and that those changes persist up to sort of 3 to 5 years from birth. So long after weaning. But really interestingly, there's actually also a difference in, so babies that are exclusively pump fed with breast milk actually then have a different microbiota again. So it's really interesting that direct breastfeeding actually gives you different gut bugs to pumped milk. And so there must be then this, you know,
is that because of the saliva?
Yeah, so probably that communication back between it. So we're not, it's not really sure quite why that happens. But so there's sort of four groups really. You've got your exclusively breastfed from directly from the breast, then you've got your pumped breastfed babies, then you've got your mixed fed that are somewhere in the middle, and then you've got your formula fed. So they've got four distinct groups. And I think it's really only with time and increasing research, increasing understanding, that we're going to understand what that means. But certainly there are differences.
And I wonder whether, like the system you were saying, whether they're not actually getting milk from the boob. It's pumped and then it sort of emulates it, whether that has the same impact as the breastfed or whether the bottle
fed. Well, I was thinking that probably has more impact. That probably has the same impact as breastfed because they're still having a connection with the nipple, maybe, yeah. And the saliva. But I wondered whether nipple shields also make a difference because they're not making full contact with the nipple, whether they would fall under the pumped bottle.
So I think there are a lot of unanswered questions with it all, and that I don't think people know that the answer to that question. Yeah. And also, I don't think although there's this two-way connection, we don't fully understand why the difference is between direct and pumped. Is it that two-way connection? Is there something else going on? Is there bacteria from the skin, so like friendly bacteria? Is there something different when you're sterilizing all the plastic? I don't think we really understand. I think, you know, more research is needed to understand it, and also what it means. You know, what does that mean that you've got a different microbiota? As we know that, you know, the microbiota is so important. And certainly the first 1,000 days of life is a really critical period for development of the immune system. And up to 70% of your immune system is in the gut. So those first few months of life, trying to recognize the difference between self and non-self, so that's your own cells and foreign microorganisms, which is the basis of autoimmune diseases. So where you don't recognize your own cells as self, you think they're foreign and you attack them, they may have lifelong consequences. And certainly there's some evidence to support that, but you know, more research is needed. And I think it's all really feeds into how important breastfeeding is, and probably the more we understand about the microbiota, the more we're
going to understand about the benefits of breast milk.
And also then just about the sort of benefit, not just for baby, but also the benefit for mum, that you've got that psychological aspect of bonding that we talked about, but also that you're decreasing your long-term risk of breast cancer, and it may protect you against ovarian cancer and type 2 diabetes. So I think, you know, you've got all of those added benefits as well.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. I mean, anything to prevent any of those things. I mean, obviously it's not a guarantee, but it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, I know that some women, when they're in that breastfeeding time, it's all like, you know, they're exhausted. Those night feeds are a killer. And it seems like you'll never get through and you'll never feel normal again. But actually, your body, like, there's so many things going on with your body. Like, I found that it's really easy to fall asleep straight away after you've, like, fed. Like, there was some, I'm sure I read something or was at a talk about it, and it was saying that, you know, your body, like, you wake up instantly when the baby's crying anyway, like your body senses it, and then once you've fed them, it's almost like your body can instantly go right to sleep. I don't know if everyone finds that, but I must admit, when I was feeding, like the night feed, I would find that, you know, you've changed nappy, put them back in bed, and actually you would fall asleep really quickly because your body knows it needs the sleep.
I think it just needs
sleep.
I mean, I find it really difficult to fall asleep most of the time, but when I was breastfeeding, I was like, yeah.
But I'm lazy, so for me, the fact that I could breastfeed was amazing, because it meant that literally I picked up
baby,
boob, baby back, sleep. I didn't have to, like, get out of bed, go and get the thingy. I don't even know what you use.
The bottle?
Like, sterilizer. Yeah. Make sure that you've got the bottles there. And I know people who are organised, who, like, get all of that ready before the night stuff and things, but I'm not that person. I never have been. But I probably still wouldn't have been. So I'd have been, like, stumbling around in the dark trying to find the bottle, or kicking Tom out to try and get the bottle. And so that, for me, was, like, the game changer. And I kind of wish that people understood, and I know that people do, how easy it can be if you can just, like, get through those first initial difficult stages. And it's a shame, really, that people don't have the support.
Yeah.
And I know that COVID's been incredibly difficult. A very good friend of mine set up in Devon, actually, a support network for women, particularly to do with breastfeeding. So you could go in and it's, like, counselling sessions and things like that, but they had to shut down. It's all funded by charities. Mm. The charities' funding isn't there, and it's, like, it's one of those things that, like, then the kids aren't ill, the mums aren't ill, nobody's gonna die. I don't mean that in a, like, throwaway manner, but that's why there's no support there, because it's one of those things. It's like, well, it would be nice if I can, or nice if they could, but people don't really put enough importance on the benefits of baby and for mum, and just the general
the benefits of the health for both mum and baby
long term
are proven. Like, there are facts. So why wouldn't I just don't understand why the government would think, okay, look, actually there's going to be a long term benefit to us, because there's going to be less people having XYZ because of it. And also, it's going to be more beneficial to the people who are doing it, because they're not having to spend money on formula, you know.
And that's the rub, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the formula companies don't want us to stop buying formula, and they're the ones who give back with their taxes.
With their tax. But the problem is that, you know, it's so expensive. I mean, I don't have the numbers.
It's prohibitively expensive for people who are on very low incomes or who are on benefits. Working in the CAB, we constantly had mums coming in saying it was so expensive, and what can they do? And it's really tough.
But so I think it's really interesting points that you've raised there, that, I mean, I'm a huge advocate of the NHS. I've worked in it, you know, over a decade, and there are lots of really fantastic things about it, but at the end of the day, there's a finite budget, and I think it really forces a lot of the time that if it's not, you know, it's fighting fires, and if it's not burning now, then because there are enough fires that are burning. And so there are lots of really important care, you know, like end of life care is often, hospices are often funded completely by charities. You know, think of Macmillan, you know, cancer care funded by a charity. And, you know, I think there are lots of examples of where care could be better, and, or, you know, support could be better, but maybe there just isn't the funding, or there haven't been advocacy for it, or, and it's a shame. And I agree with you. I think that, you know, hopefully long term people will realise that this is actually really important, and we're, you know, thinking of the long term health of the nation. And I think, you know, people are doing a really great job of trying to support women out there, and trying to increase the length of time you breastfeed for, and increase the number of women that are doing that. It's just, it needs to go further, and I hope that with time it will.
I think also for a lot of women, they don't like I think breastfeeding is still taboo in this country, and it's like, you know, you still see people who are like, will give someone like a dirty look if they're breastfeeding in a restaurant. Well, you know, they're just feeding. Mm. It's no different to you eating your steak. There is no, it's still feeding, it's nutrition. It's not like someone's, you know, no one wants to get their whole boob out and like squirt someone in the face with milk. Do you know what I mean? The whole point is that you're just trying to feed your baby. And I think there is still a taboo, and it's still not a normal thing to do here. And I think some people are nervous about the process of, like, you know, well, what would I do if I'm out and about? Or they'll feed at home, but they won't feed out and about. Or, you
which
know,
means they can't don't go out because they know that they need to be back at a certain time.
And that's because, like, boobs have become this, like, you know, because, well, they can't, but they've always been, I'm sure, a sexual thing. But it's like, well, it's when it's a boob that is feeding a baby, it is not a sexual thing. It is, you know, it's a function, it's a necessity. And I do think that a lot of people are nervous about the prospect of getting their boobs out, prospects of doing it in front of people. Yep. And that's one of the reasons why we created Tilby. It was definitely, our focus was always about the breastfeeding first, actually, and then the maternity. Well, we were like, well, actually, if someone's buying into this item, let's make it of more value and of like kind of something that will stand the test of time for them and be the better investment. But
so sustainability. So yeah, so it's really a great segue there, Claire. So I just to say at the end that I actually found I loved breastfeeding, and as I just said, I was sad to give it up when I, you know, eventually stopped. But I found it a time where I found it really difficult to find clothes that I liked. They were all incredibly dowdy, really difficult, and I hated the clothes that I wore. And I think, although that sounds a really sort of shallow and vain thing to say in some ways, actually clothes are so important for feeling great and confidence and mental health. And so I think, you know, I sadly, my children had stopped breastfeeding by the time you invented Tilby, because I'd have loved some, you know, well-designed functional clothes. So before we talk about Tilby, I want to just ask you about your backstory as to sort of where you both came from, because I think you've got a really fascinating journey to Tilby, and I think that people would be quite surprised what you used to do in your earlier lives. So,
Nikki's is way more interesting than mine.
So I'm actually a criminal barrister by trade, a defence barrister. So I did all my training, went to university, got a law degree, and then practiced for about 10 or 11 years. I can't remember. It feels like a lifetime ago. And, yeah, it's a fantastic job. And I do miss elements of it. And there are elements I really don't miss about it. Budget, legal aid. I mean, like, you talk about the NHS has got a budget. So is the legal aid system. But don't start me on that one.
That's a whole other thing.
So I was unhappy. I was finding that I was working all the hours and finding it very stressful. And, you know, wanted to start thinking about my future and what that looked like. And you'll find that most barristers are constantly talking about their future and what they should be doing rather than what they are doing. But Claire was like, well, why don't we, you know, start up something together? This is where I'm at. Come and work with me. And so I was like, okay, I'll do it. It's kind of a leap of faith, really. And because we get on so well, and because we, you know,
family,
we thought, well, let's just do it. Claire basically is the inspiration and the brainchild behind it.
Not anymore. I think it's very much Evans, but it was definitely my idea. But I was in fashion already. I was a failed actress first and foremost, but soon realised that I was never going to be able to have a mortgage whilst acting, because I wasn't that good at it and no one's going to pay me. It was a hobby, really, that didn't pay me any money. But and then I'd always done textiles, always loved fashion, and then kind of retrained and became a stylist, and was working for the lady who does 10 years younger. So I was working as a personal stylist for her. And I had lots of clients. I was also had my own business, but I realised that lots of people were in this like maternity situation and going, well, what do I wear? Can I wear this? And we were like adapting old bits and pieces. And that was kind of in the back of my mind. And I was already doing styling and blogging and the likes. And then when I fell pregnant with Matilda, I was like, ah, I now really get it, that there isn't anything that's me. Like, it didn't have, and I think that what it was, it didn't have personality. And your body's changing so much during pregnancy. Like, you know, everything's growing, your hair is getting greasy, your skin's rubbish. The one thing you really want to, you can do is dress yourself and like dress yourself into that confident, like, or like get yourself over that illness or whatever you're feeling. And I just didn't think that there was anything. It was all like Breton stripe or grey marl, and I was like, this is really underwhelming.
And they were all like tents as well. I used to find that, you know, you just had this sort of, people would say, oh, size up. So for me, pregnancy clothes sort of almost, or maternity clothes sort of almost came and went. And I, you know, I don't really, well, I felt like I lived in my pajamas because I had horrendous sickness. So it was only really when I started trying to sort of breastfeed and find clothes that I found them really poorly designed, actually. You just couldn't, I know that you've got lots of, yours have got those sort of, you know, clever hidden flaps and hidden access so that you wouldn't know that it's a breastfeeding top, but you'd think it looks like a normal top, but you've got that hidden access. And I found it really hard to find tops that were designed to help you and that actually looked half decent and weren't like a big grey tent.
Yeah, or made well. That was one of the things that I found, that I found some bits that I quite liked, but they were made so poorly. And also, the price point, instantly alarm bells. I'm like, there's no way that that's been made in an ethical way. And the fabric is of poor quality, the sewing's of poor quality, it's not going to last. And so that was really like a bit of a like, well, you know, I think, why can't we make something? Why can't I get it? And if I can't get it, why can't I make it? And that was why the Matilda dress was born, and actually the Beatrice top. So it was the Matilda dress and the Beatrice top, which is this, and then I haven't got the Matilda dress. But and it basically, the concept was that I didn't want to get my whole boob out, and I didn't want to get my tummy out. What I would never want to get my tummy out pre-babies, definitely not post-babies, but when you've just had a baby, the last thing you want to do is show your whole waist. So one of the ones I bought when I was at the baby show before we came up with the idea was like a jumper, and it had a zip all the way down the side, but then to feed I would have to unzip it here, and then all of my doughy tummy was on show, and like pasty doughy tummy and nipple, great, just what I want everyone to see post baby. And so our concept was always that it would be really great if that you didn't have to have your tummy on show, and you didn't have to have the top of your boob on show. So this is one of ours, and literally you just lift it up, and this has got a central access, so you can feed, I could have my boob out now, and you would have barely anything on show.
By the time the baby's head's over the front of it, you would literally see nothing, and it almost like they're having a cuddle. So it's really discreet and possible.
Don't you mind, but my bra is so super white.
You can do it. You're wearing, so the other thing that we did was the underbust, which is something so that you cover your tummy, so that when if you put any top on, you've got your tummy covered, but then it goes underneath your bra, so then you can then feed. So any top on top gives you that cover here, but then you've got that protection, and I think you want that protection because you don't want to get naked in front of a load of people. But I remember wearing my Matilda dress the first time, because I was still, when we were launching Tilby, I was still styling, and I had done I think it was for a shoe company, I'd done their campaign, and then they were like, come to the launch, and I just had Matilda, I must have had Seb because we'd just launched. And I was like, I've got to bring my baby along, and they were like, yeah, we want to meet Seb. And I was sat opposite two women. I just sat down and said, do you mind if I feed here? And they both looked at me as if to say, yeah, that's fine. How are you going to feed? Because I was wearing like the Matilda, which is quite a tight fitting dress. And I just sat down and went like this, and like literally was like that. And he was here, and they went, oh my God, that's amazing. How are you feeding him? This is like, and they were like blown away, because they were like, if you hadn't said to us you were feeding, we would have just thought you'd sat down and given your baby a cuddle.
Yeah. And I said, that's exactly what I was looking for. I never found him in breastfeeding clothes. And it's such a shame that you didn't found this until after it's got breastfeeding. While we're recording this, the COP26 conference is on. And I just really wanted to sort of talk to you about sustainability, because your clothes aren't just for breastfeeding, are they? They can be used pregnancy, they can be used postpartum, you could have future children, and then while you're not even breastfeeding or pregnant, because you don't have to use the flap, they might be there, but it certainly doesn't mean that
so
they're...
Like, this top is a prime example. So this is our Beatrice top. It's got a vented back, so it grows
with your bump,
or when you're nursing you've got that underbust underneath which covers your tummy. But then afterwards, like, I wear it just tucked in your jeans or just over your top. So the whole premise and the thing that we're trying to sort of like encourage is that our garments are made in factories which offer their employees all the things that they should be offering. I'm not sure, like, I can say they're fair wage. I think they are, but I would need to take. They are.
They are.
But like,
we've got documents to prove it.
So they're fair wage. So, but I don't know, with B Corps and stuff, you have to like have things.
We're not a B Corp status because not 100% of our garments are sustainable fabric either.
But what we're trying to do.
Just to interrupt you there, so I don't know what that is, and I'm sure people listening won't know what that is. So what's it, a B Corp, did you say?
It's a B Corp. So it's basically companies that are fully sustainable and are giving back to the environment as well. So it's recyclable fabrics. It's the factories using the proper processes to do all of those things. But there's other stages as well. So
within the office and like your administration, your like paper usage,
how much electricity you use. So it's
we're not there.
But is that something that you're, you know, really passionate about, this sort of sustainability in general? Because you could presumably make your garments fairly cheaply in China.
Yeah.
So, or you know, overseas. So why did you choose the company, and where are they, and why do you like them, and how did you sort of, what's your sort of ethos then with sustainability?
So I think there's two stages to it. The first stage is that when we started doing it, we wanted our garments to be made well and made properly, because with that in mind, you know that your garment is going to stand the test of time. So you'll use it through your first pregnancy, then feeding baby, and it will still be looking, I mean, it probably won't be looking as great as the day it was shipped to you, but it will still look great. It'll still have the colour, it'll still be that dress, it'll still fit you properly, and it'll
still have the quality.
Yeah. So the quality was really important from that point of view. And then we started looking at using the recyclable fabrics. But the sustainability comes from two things. It comes from the fabrics, but also it comes from not wasting the products. So you take a dress, you can wear it through pregnancy, you don't need to buy something new for nursing, and you don't need to buy something afterwards. That dress will see you through that journey. It will take you from bump through to boobing and then beyond that. So it's an investment piece. It's not buying a lot of things. It's making sure that what you buy is a piece that you keep, that you use, and that doesn't go to landfill after like three wears. Because that is one of the biggest things about fashion. It's that fashion is fast, and fashion
is disposable.
It's disposable fast fashion, and that is what's causing all the problems in landfills. The waste from fashion is unbelievable. And one of the dresses, I remember it very well, I bought when I was pregnant. I think I wore it twice, and then it didn't work for me. First and foremost, it wasn't great anyway because the grinning on it. So basically grinning is where when you stretch the fabric, you can see the white through, so you lose the colour and the pattern. And I mean, I've got a big bottom anyway. I do not want the fabric to be disappearing or the pattern to disappear over my bottom. So the sustainability in terms of the journey of the dress. And then secondly, which we've started doing, and it's not possible, we're a small company, and we're trying to do more with sustainable fabrics. Not all of it is, but where we can do, we do. We use recycled polyester, Ecovero lensing, and these are all companies which specialise in making jersey, which is used from wood pulp, and the processes that they use. So the sustainability element of it is like thinking of different ways of utilising fibres, making sure it's more eco.
Reducing our waste when in the cutting process of the garment as well. So like our masks, like our face coverings that we did during COVID, were using excess fabric that we had left from the kids' t-shirts that we made.
Yeah.
And then obviously also we also donate from each purchase. As well, which is a charity base as well. But I think for us, it's all about like what we don't want to be is another brand like adding to landfill and adding to that fast fashion. And obviously someone's pregnancy is only 9 months, but their motherhood journey will go on and on and on. And we hope, and I mean, we wear our clothes, and I know it's our brand, but neither of us are breastfeeding and neither of us are pregnant, but we wear the clothes. And actually since making them and since being more conscientious with our choices of fabrics and our choices of factories and packaging and all sorts of things, I've definitely find that I'm buying less. I mean, I'm wearing a lot of tilby, so that kind of helps, but I'm being more conscious. I'm thinking, well, I'd rather buy really good quality that I know is going to stand the test of time, rather than popping to a high street store and getting, you know, 10 t-shirts for 40 quid or something. I don't know what you, don't really wear t-shirts either, so I don't know. But do you know what I mean? So that's, we're trying to encourage mums to think of this, their, our garments, as not just their maternity, but also once they're not carrying the baby, yeah, they can wear them and they can still love them in the same way.
It's just got, and a still nice feel great attached in them. Yeah. Because, like, if you, you would not know unless someone told you that this was a breastfeeding dress.
No, so I know you both, and you're both friends of mine, and I've, you know, seen you less over the pandemic, but certainly you always look fantastic, and I love the patterns and the styles. I think it's a really fantastic idea, and that's why I'm also, just sort of add this in here as well, I'm really excited to that you're going to team up with me together, and you're going to donate a really wonderful tracksuit that I wasn't going to donate, but I wish it was actually coming to me. Honest, just as a thank you to all my followers for reaching 10k.
So
look out for that soon. I think it would suit all ages, whether you're teens to menopause, and there's no need to be breastfeeding. It's a really great trendy loungewear.
Well, the loungewear actually is quite we've produced more than we need, because we wanted to cover the bases, because some people like, we've got the, if you're pregnant, we've got an over the bump tracksuit trouser, so that's perfect for pregnancy. And then we've got a post-pregnancy tracksuit, which is tracksuit trouser, which can work for, you know, when you're breastfeeding and just generally for life, pre-baby even. Or if you want to wear it while you're pregnant, you can wear it underneath your bump. But we kind of did two versions of the trousers, and we did two versions of the tops, so that then if someone's breastfeeding, we've got the one that's got the zips on. So like one of the tracksuit tops has the zips built in, which means you can access, but the other doesn't have any zips at all. So if you're already not breastfeeding, or you're not going to breastfeed, obviously we would encourage you to try, but it gives you that versatility so that you've got either or.
But also, if you've got your, you know, if you're like me and you've passed breastfeeding, I'm not having any more children, you know, I can still buy a tracksuit.
Exactly.
Just because I'm not breastfeeding, it doesn't really matter.
We would say you'll go with this top, which hasn't got the zips, and then you'd go for the post-pregnancy trouser, and it works perfectly. Like, it's,
and
just,
if for example you did have another baby or you were pregnant, the top would work for you while you were pregnant.
Yeah, so
as well,
all of our tops, like, we make sure that everything allows. So most of our garments are jersey, so that, and we work really hard on the process of, like, the choice of fabric and the dyeing, so that we know that it's going to stretch, it's going to bounce back. So that it's not, you know, sometimes you buy things that are jersey and maybe if you were pregnant it would stretch, and we've worked really hard on the choices of fabrics to ensure that that doesn't happen, so it bounces back, so it's got a really strong stability in the fibers, which allow you it to stretch, it to not grin, as Nikki was mentioning earlier. But then post baby, when your bump isn't there, it just, the ruching enables everything just to sit really neatly and nicely, and it will work for you long term,
and also give you a bit of body confidence when your body naturally doesn't spring back to, you know, model-esque within the first 10 minutes of having your baby.
Before pregnancy,
I'm not sure I was ever model-esque.
I think I could have done with the ruching pre-pregnancy too.
Well, I think that, you know, I've worn many dresses that are ruched with not pregnant or pregnant or postpartum.
Yeah.
But one thing we haven't covered is, where did the name Tilby come from? So people might have guessed me talking about your children, but I think it's just a really lovely, just sort of shows a sort of family element of what's important to you. So where did the name Tilby come from?
So my daughter, my firstborn, and the reason why I came up with the concept was Matilda, who we at the time called Tilly a lot and still do.
And then mine, Beatrice, and we call her B.
So it was Tilby. Yeah.
We were thinking of loads of names. We were trying to come up with some.
We had
clever,
like, Access, and then someone said it sounds a bit like it could be like medical grade, like, you know.
Or like, a bank. Or something.
Yeah, like, yeah, something, yeah, like, should be something different. And then we played around, and we just kept coming back to it because they were the inspiration. Like, we were. It was with babies, you know, we were sat with them
if
as babies breastfeeding.
Them,
we wouldn't have come up with a concept. It was having them that showed us that there was a gap in the market and that something needed to be there. And I think the leopard print probably comes from us, because we are just really a lot into leopard. But we were discussing this morning, we need to diversify a little bit.
Not everybody loves leopard.
But I think of leopard as a neutral.
Yeah, it is in our palette.
It is in our house.
It's been really fantastic talking to you both. And I should just say There've been a number of celebrities that have worn your clothes, and I think they're really fantastic, which is why I'm helping support you guys on here. And I think it's lots of people want to support their local businesses, shop small, and support, you know, two really hardworking mums that have come up with this fantastic idea. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us. And and congratulations on nearing that 10K. It's very exciting.
I really hope you enjoyed listening, and I'd love if you'd give me a 5-star review and subscribe so that other people can find me too. I'm also at Healthy Eating Doctor on Instagram, and I have lots more nutrition education information on both my video courses and on my website, healthyeatingdoctor.com.